Good afternoon and welcome to the afternoon session of the May 4th, 2016 Portland City Council session. I am presiding while Mayor Hales is on his way. Carla, please call the roll.
Fish, Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Hales, Fritz.
Here. We are here for a very happy celebration here to adopt items, items 465 and 466. Please read those items.
465, direct city bureaus to prioritize reuse of artifacts from the Eric Ladd and other cast iron artifact collections in the Skidmore Old Town Historic District. And 466, adopt the Skidmore Old Town Historic District design guidelines.
Thank you. And I say this is a happy event because I know that many people have been working on this for 10 years or more. So staff, please come up and present. And I would like to dedicate this whole session to Art DeMuro and Bing Sheldon, who are two of those who worked very, very hard on this, and I know are with us in spirit today.
Well, good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Joe Zender, chief planner with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and I'm here with Nicholas Starin, who's going to be actually describing the proposal to you today. And just as introduction, I wanted to point out that what you're seeing in these guidelines not merely have been in the works for many years, but also represent our efforts to improve the quality and sort of the legibility and the efficiency of the guidelines. Better guidelines add to the productivity and the success of the review process. And when we did these, that was our model to be able to do that. So it's a constant process improvement. With that, I'll turn it over to Nicholas.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Nicholas Starn with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. We're here to have a public hearing on two items. Updated guidelines for the Skidmore Old Town Historic District, as well as a companion resolution calling for city bureaus to prioritize the use of cast iron artifacts in city-owned or controlled development projects in the historic district. I'll take this moment and note for the record that the project files are in a cardboard box over there and are available for review by anyone who wishes to do so. The Skidmore Old Town District is Portland's oldest historic district and perhaps its most significant historic resource. It's where the city began and contains a world-class collection of historic architecture. It covers about 56 acres, including rights-of-way, 17 complete city blocks, and 7 partial blocks. It was designated as a National Historic Landmark in 1977, and that's one of only 2 such historic districts in the state of Oregon, the other being in Jacksonville in southern Oregon. It's significant at the national level both for the history that it conveys, the history of Portland, but also the growth of the Pacific Northwest, as well as its rich collection of historic buildings. The district contains 57 contributing historic properties. They're in a wide range of historic design styles, but most importantly for its historic character are its collection of 19th century cast iron buildings, primarily in the Italianate style, so 2 examples being the New Market Theater and the Merchant Block. It has perhaps the most important collection of cast iron buildings on the West Coast and one of the most important in the country. There are existing there are existing guidelines that guide development projects in the historic district. However, they're now 30 years old, and they lack any illustrative examples or photographs and have other sort of problems in their implementation, and the need to update them has been identified for a long time. The effort to update these guidelines goes back at least to 2008 and actually earlier than that. An earlier version of the guidelines document before you today was last seen by the City Council in 2008. The guidelines were part of a larger regulatory package that included a series of zoning code amendments in the district that included proposals for increases to building heights on selected sites you see in the map in front of you in yellow. That process, public process for that package of amendments that included the guidelines and zoning code changes included a process that took over a year, had a community advisory group, numerous meetings and conversations with the AIA, preservation organizations, the Neighborhood Association, and interested citizens, many work sessions and hearings with the Planning Commission, Landmarks Commission, Design Commission. However, while the guidelines were widely supported by members of the community and property owners and design professionals, the proposals for height increases were highly controversial. And as a result, City Council did not take any formal action on that package at that time in 2008. Public interest in adopting the guidelines has never really waned. And we heard that loud and clear in recent years during the West Quadrant planning process. The West Quadrant plan, as you know, this council adopted in 2015, calls for reviewing, revising, and updating these guidelines. So accordingly, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability reinitiated the legislative process to adopt the guidelines and the companion cast iron resolution. So we took the 2008 draft, the guidelines, as a starting point, and reinitiated the review process at the Landmarks Commission, which unanimously recommended their adoption with changes that they supported in February 8th. However, just to be clear, we're not bringing forth at this time any proposals to change the code, zoning code as it relates to the district, and this package does not have any proposed height increases, and the draft Central City 2035 plan is not proposing any height increases within the historic district. So now I'll just briefly give you an overview of what's in the guidelines document themselves. The first chapter contains information about the purpose of the guidelines, how they're used in the historic resource review process. The second chapter contains an extensive set of background information on both the history of the district as well as its defining physical attributes and characteristics that make it such a unique part of the city, and this information is very useful for property owners and developers contemplating projects, as well as helping to inform the design and review process. Chapter three is really the heart of the guidelines document that contain the actual guidelines themselves. There are four sets of guidelines. The first are general guidelines, which apply to all sorts of development proposals in the district, so proposals for alterations or changes to existing buildings, as well as proposals for new development. Then there are a series of three guidelines that are tailored to specific types of development proposals, alterations, additions to existing buildings, and new development. I'm just going to provide you one example of one guideline section to give you a sense of kind of how they're structured. This particular example is guideline A7, which speaks to awnings and canopies in the district. First, there's another background statement that describes the particular attribute or subject of the guideline. That's followed by the guideline itself, which is generally a relatively short, plain English directive. And that guideline language itself are the actual approval criteria that are used in the review process. In this case, the guideline reads, integrate awnings and canopies within the district in a manner sensitive to the building and district. Following the guideline, there are generally two or often quite a few more maybe accomplished by statements. These are examples with images that provide examples of how that guideline may be met in various different ways. This particular example shows how a non-historic awning shown in the bottom picture was replaced by an historically accurate canopy on the top. Now I'll just briefly cover some of the changes to the guidelines that have occurred since 2008 when the council last saw the document. As I mentioned, we started from the 2008 draft, and both staff and Landmarks Commission's approaches to been to take a relatively light hand. The guidelines went through an extensive process and had a wide degree of buy-in, so we wanted to be respectful of that. That said, there are a few changes, and those have been guided by both testimony this council heard back in 2008, as well as more recent testimony from district stakeholders, as well as the work that the Landmarks Commission has done recently. The majority of changes are actually new images, most of which reflect new sort of historically compatible development that has occurred since 2008. For example, here the on the left-hand side, the addition to the Mercy Corps building, and on the right-hand side, the renovation of the Bickle Block. There are a few examples of changes of guideline language themselves. I've relatively few. I chose this example because it's in direct response to testimony the council heard and input has been reiterated from the design community and constituents. The way the guideline was previously worded, it could lead one to believe that we were trying to encourage new development to be done in the 19th century sort of architectural Italianate style, and that was never really the intent. So we substituted the word Italianate with cast iron. And this change, as well as some change to the background, it gets more to the intent, which is to get new buildings to respond to the characteristics of cast iron buildings, tall first stories, glass in the storefronts, detailed work around the fenestration, but not literally sort of mimic an Italianate or historic building. We've also changed some of the maybe accomplished by statements or examples. Guideline A2 speaks to wanting to reinforce the strong street wall. The previous example that was in the document, you can see the crossed out language would have made it very hard to approve any sorts of courtyards or alleyways in the district. And while the intent is still to encourage buildings to, you know, come to the street edge and be lot to lot, there might be instances where we would want to have alleyways or courtyards, and so this example says, you know, it might be okay to do that, but provide a substantial gateway to help contribute to that sense of street wall. So I'm going to move on, unless there's any questions, or we can take them at the end, but the companion cast iron resolution. This resolution, I'm going to paraphrase or put some words into Bill Hawkins' mouth, who's here today, and you'll hear from him, but I think something that he would say, he's the, you know, the great scholar and longtime champion of this district, is cast iron is the reason this district exists. And there's been a long-held desire to see reincorporation of cast iron artifacts and facades into the historic district. These are architectural elements that were salvaged from historic buildings that were demolished in the, I think, primarily the 40s, 50s, and 60s. They are owned, a lot of them are owned by the Portland Development Commission, also some by the Bosco Milligan Foundation. Bill Hawkins, back in 2008, as part of that larger project, conducted a wonderful inventory of those collections, and so we know a lot about them. And this resolution would direct city bureaus to make essentially good faith efforts when doing development projects on city-owned property or city-controlled development projects in the district, make good faith efforts to look at whether it makes sense to incorporate those cast iron artifacts in a development. They don't require the use of those artifacts, but they just require an effort to make sure it makes sense. It might not always make sense in all kinds of projects. So that's kind of the end of my presentation summary. Staff asks you to adopt the guidelines and pass the cast iron resolution. I did want to pass on apologies from the Landmarks Commission. Scheduling conflicts prevented any of them from being here today, but they requested that I reiterate their unanimous support for these two items. Any questions?
Questions, colleagues?
Dumb question. What is cast iron?
So, you know, Bill Hawkins can tell you with more.
Sure, Bill can tell me too.
Yeah. So in the 19th century, an architectural advancement sort of and metallurgical advancements made it possible to use cast iron to sort of replicate, in often cases, Renaissance designs, capitals and curlicues and so forth. And it was sort of a new movement to have a kit of parts that you could pretty easily put up a pretty grand-looking building using sort of then-current sort of machine-age technology. And so a cast iron building is generally a building whose facade is sort of characterized. They're generally masonry, but maybe with iron supports and so forth, but they're characterized by ornamentation that is of cast iron.
Is that the same as flat iron? Isn't there a flat iron district in New York? Or?
I think the flat iron refers to a wedge-shaped okay. building on a corner.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure Bill will edify us
here. Bill will set me straight.
We actually have a couple of flat iron buildings, sort of.
Yeah.
And I have a question about the artifacts. Certainly we should be using them in the district. Are there so many that we're unlikely to be able to use them in the district? And if so, are they ever going to be allowed to go outside of the district, or are we just going to keep storing them until there's an opportune time?
There are quite a few. It's kind of a hodgepodge collection. I don't think we have too many complete set of an entire building. So if we were to reuse them, we would probably have to replicate some parts. I do want to say, there's no requirement. This doesn't require that they be used specifically in the district. It might make sense to use them someplace else. For instance, the Yamhill district has cast iron architecture. In fact, some of the artifacts don't, in fact, come from Skidmore. They come from other parts of the city. So it might make sense using them elsewhere.
That's basically saying use them wisely and don't give them away. And who owns them?
PDC, I believe, owns the Eric Ladd collection. Eric Ladd was a preservationist who salvaged these. The Bosco Milligan Architectural Heritage Center also owns, I believe, a smaller collection, but has an agreement with PDC to transfer ownership as soon as a project kind of comes together.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Thanks very much. So, sorry I was late. You obviously heard the presentation. Is there anyone else that wants to speak on this?
I show three people signed up.
Come on up, please.
Jackie Peterson Loomis, Bill Hawkins, and Peggy Moretti.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Whoever would like to be first.
I'm Jackie Peterson Loomis. Good afternoon, Commissioners and Mayor Hales. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm here with apologies from Sarah Stevenson, the co-chair of the Land Use and Design Commission from the Old Town Chinatown Community Association. I'm a member of that committee, and I'm here to basically read to you the letter which was recently sent to the committee for the record. Dear Mayor Hales and Commissioners Fish, Salzman, Fritz, and Novick, we are writing on behalf of the Old Town Chinatown Community Association Land Use and Design Review Committee to share our appreciation and support for the revised Old Town Skidmore Historic Design Guidelines that will come before you today for your approval. Old Town Chinatown straddles two national historic districts, the Skidmore Historic District and the new Chinatown Japantown Historic District. These two districts are home to many historic buildings and form the epicenter of Portland's rich multicultural history. Our community association, along with many neighbors and stakeholders, is working hard to revitalize and to bring this district back to life. One significant component of that revitalization work is ensuring that future development is compatible with the existing historic fabric of our neighborhood. Historic design guidelines are critical to this goal. We appreciate the revisions made to the previous draft of the Skidmore design guidelines, particularly the change that replaces natural materials with historical compatible high-quality materials, and the guideline change for new construction that requires developers to integrate the design of new buildings with the cast iron character as opposed to Italianate character of the historic district. We feel that these changes more clearly express the neighborhood's desire for compatibility with Italianate and cast iron buildings rather than requiring developers to replicate a style that may not always be appropriate. We enthusiastically endorse the Skidmore Old Town Historic Design Guidelines and urge their immediate adoption, and we thank you, our City Council, for your time and commitment to preserving and celebrating what makes Portland unique and special. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, I'm very pleased to help support this declaration that you have and the changed guidelines for the district. I've followed this for a long, long time, really, since its inception. My partner, George McMath, was very instrumental on the first district. It became an historic district and later a national historic district. To support that effort of being a national landmark, I hope by writing this book that explains everything you ever would like to know about and internationally. But what is most important from that, all that information, is how unique Portland's historic district is in an international scene. I've gone to most cities that had cast iron. New York's Soho Historic District is a huge district filled with totally elaborate, gorgeous cast iron buildings, and a very important district internationally. Portland happened to be founded in the 1840s when cast iron industry first started. We had iron here as we slowly developed. Our first building had a cast iron front. The iron, not until the 60s, locally was used, and then we had every building in the city had a cast iron front. Now, when you want to promote your historic district and have something that is totally unique like that, like being the only city left that has cast iron of this quantity, there are others, but it makes Portland's district highly individual. I wrote for PDC a large explanation of all the iron and made proposals in it. There are indeed about five complete sets. Now, you have to know in our historic district about half the buildings, half the lots in the district have historic buildings on them. The other half, a little bit less, are parking lots. Now, if these cast iron sets were put back into the district, we would have a predominantly historic district rather than a district with half modern buildings and half historic buildings. So to my mind, this is a pivotal time to reinforce that. The fact that PDC has all these sets, plus the Bosco Milligan collection, plus one that my name somehow mysteriously attached to, gives a huge variety of opportunity to do this and make and reinforce, as this guideline is saying, reinforce our historic district. So I completely endorse it in every way. I want everyone to remember that we had a magnificent historic district before we tore it down. What we have left is still significant, so we should help support it and fill it in using these parts. I'm sure there are many ways to use them, but if possible, to use them in sets and adorn the rest of them with pieces that we have or sculptures or whatever. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Peggy, welcome.
Good afternoon. I'm Peggy Moretti, Executive Director of Restore Oregon, and I also serve on the Old Town Neighborhood Association Land Use Committee. So I'm going to be very brief. I'm going to be echoing our very, very enthusiastic endorsement of the design guidelines and the ability to reuse the cast iron collection. As you probably know, Restore Oregon has for a number of years been working diligently to promote the idea of compatible infill development and the protection of the integrity of our historic neighborhoods and historic districts, and this is our finest one. So this makes great sense. The design guidelines provide clarity for development, and clarity, I've heard from a number of my development friends, is awfully important to get things done. It will protect the overall integrity of the district and its historic character, and it couldn't have been more vetted than this set of guidelines has been. So I'm hoping there are no doubts left in your minds whatsoever and that you can approve these post-haste. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for any of these three leaders in this movement? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Others that we have signed up to speak?
That was only three who signed up.
Either item? Okay. So unless there are any further council questions, then we'll take a vote on the resolution. Item 465, let's vote on that, please.
Saltzman?
Well, thank you for doing this work, and it seems like it's very well supported this time around. So putting aside some of the tougher questions, I guess, it really helps. And this is a very important asset, very important part of our city's heritage, and glad to not only have the design guidelines in place, but to also figure out ways that we can incorporate the cast iron in new development as well. So since we have an abundance of it, we should show it. Aye.
Oh, Novick.
Commissioner, are you saying if you got it, flaunt it?
Yeah.
Great presentation. Thank you very much. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, congratulations. This is certainly something that's been on my city council agenda / bucket list since I first got on the council in 2009, having seen what happened in 2008. And Mayor Adams tried several times to bring it to council. I don't know who was able to work the magic of finally putting the different pieces in different places, but it was probably a group effort, and I appreciate everybody. It's quite astonishing to me that here we are without both chambers packed and massive lobbying attempts and such. So sometimes you know that there has been enough process and we have finally come to agreement this is the right thing to do. And as I said, I know that Bing and Art are very happy about this. Aye.
Hales.
Well, I want to thank the Bureau, the community, the neighborhood, because all really three have come together here. The Bureau's done great work. The leadership in the architectural and historic preservation community has been great advocates and problem solvers in this work. And then I think the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association and other groups and individual property owners have really helped get us to a shared understanding of why preservation is so important and why this district is so special and a way forward that includes development thoughtfully done, but preservation most of all. So I'm really, really happy about this. This is one of those things where, like you, Amanda, I want to say, yep, that's one of the things that I was very happy got done during my time of public service, and more importantly, to be able to see over time the results of not just the preservation of these buildings, but the reuse of these materials. We have some very clever architects in Portland and some very community-minded developers. I think there'll be ways and means for this resource of the cast iron parts to be used thoughtfully, and I can't wait to see how smarter people than me can figure out how that gets done on individual sites and projects. But this is a great piece of work, and yes, also in Bing and Art's name, very happy to vote aye. Aye. And then we take the second item to second reading next week. So thank you all very much. And we're 15 minutes ahead of schedule, which is a rare and blessed event. So we'll take 15 minutes and come back. So we're recessed for 15 minutes.